This is Eric Krakauer, and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o gol a Figo, e a bola é gol! O golo da Figo!
Rui Costa vai, Rui Costa já acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira, golo! 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 Golo!
And hey there, all you cool cats and kittens, and we welcome you to episode number 29 of the Seleção Podcast, a proud partner of Portugol.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to this latest podcast. As yeah, it's been a couple of months since I've put one out, since I would believe the beginning of February, after we had talked about the winter transfer window. But some things have happened in our world that have kind of put a halt to any kind of Seleção news for the most part, but I thought it was important to get back to recording and get back to talking about soccer in general and getting the points of view of someone who is living in Portugal during this time, as well as someone who covers the game globally for a sports network. So yeah, we are living in interesting times, guys. Obviously, I hope everyone is staying safe, staying at home as much as you possibly can. To all of our essential workers out there, our grocers, our doctors, our delivery people, and I don't mean to forget anyone else. So please, if you were one of these people, please don't take offense. But our law enforcement, my goodness, our firemen and firewomen and just everyone who's out there still doing what they have been asked to do before and after this pandemic starts. A big thank you from all of us who are listening, especially if you are one of these folks who are one of our essential workers and you're listening to the podcast, by all means, my sincere thanks for what you guys are doing, the sacrifice you're making in these just uncertain times. To keep our world going as best as it possibly can. So, I just felt something come over me last week or so to kind of get back on the microphone and put out an episode. I had someone reach out because I'll be honest with you guys and I don't mind being honest. When this whole pandemic first started, I was pretty freaked out. My wife has, respiratory issues. I have two small children. My parents are above the age of 65, as are my in-laws. And me myself, I have a lot of anxiety and I worry a lot. So when you put all that combined into something that I have no control over, other than how I respond at home and how we respond as a family, your brain starts going in certain dark places that you just don't want to go, and it's hard to get out of sometimes. So I was pretty down, I would say, the first couple of weeks of this thing, and not to say that I am full of joy and of whimsy, I think I have a better handle on what this new normal kind of is for all of us right now, and I think you see that with a lot of people. You either adapt or you get left behind, and no one wants to be left behind. So, I've never washed my hands more, and I never thought I was an unhygienic person to begin with, but you wash your hands a lot more. A lot of polishing and sanitizing of doors and handles and all that stuff, and it's just a new normal. And the one thing I miss most, other than just hugging my folks and hanging out with my friends and my and all my family and friends, I miss sports so much. God, I miss sports. And it's one of those things that it has been taken from us, but only temporarily. And that's the thing that I have to keep reminding myself in terms of when I start feeling a little down, when I start feeling a little worrisome. It's this is temporary. If I do what I have been asked to do by my local governments and my local officials, it's not a guarantee, obviously, but it gives me and my family and those who I love and hold dear to my heart the best opportunity to get through this thing as unscathed as possible. So you just hope and you pray that this pandemic will pass us by with as little damage as it possibly can. And to be frank, we've had much more people pass from this tragic virus than needed to be. But our thoughts are with them and their families, and we just hope that we can just get out of this thing as quickly and as safely as possible. But the reason why this podcast is up today and out to you guys today is that I wanted to contact and get in touch with some folks in Portugal and some folks who handle who work in the soccer world globally. And I couldn't have picked two better guests today for episode number 29. Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. He's going to give us a report from Portugal as what's going on in the country and what's going on with the league. As we currently sit, the league was suspended on March the 12th, as were many other leagues. But he kind of gives us an idea of where Portugal is currently in terms of handling this virus, and what are ideas that the league is kind of looking at in terms of completing the league. And then globally, we are going to talk with Eric Krakauer of BN Sports. He was kind enough to give us some time. Obviously, with BN, they have the Spanish league, the French league, the Turkish league, a lot of South American soccer as well. So he's seen it on a multiple scale in terms of how the leagues have been impacted by COVID-19, and he'll share some thoughts on that as well. So again, I can't thank you guys enough for sticking with the podcast and staying with the podcast on social media. We're actually still gaining followers, which is a good thing. I've been tweeting out not as much as I used to, obviously with everything going on, but the show continues to grow, which we're greatly appreciative of. And again, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at SlesonPod. Facebook.com/SlesonPod is our Facebook page. You can like that page and share that page with all of your friends on Facebook. SlesonPod@gmail.com is the email. And of course, you can go to SlesonPod.com, which is our website. But without further ado, I just want to go ahead and get things started here with our interview with Tom Kundert of Portugal.net as he gives us a report from Portugal during the COVID-19 pandemic as you're listening to episode number 29 of the Seleção Podcast. So our first guest here on episode number 29 of the Seleção Podcast, and we thank everybody for tuning in. It has been a while since we put one out, but under the circumstances, I thought it'd be nice to get an episode out to get a feeling of where we are in the football soccer world from both the Portuguese side and globally. We'll have Eric Krakauer later on this hour or later on this episode, but we go to Portugal first, and we are going to speak here with our good friend Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. You can follow Tom, of course, at Portugal1, PORTUGOAL, the number one. He's going to give us a little bit of a rundown of what the last 4 or 5 weeks in Portugal has been. So Tom, glad to hear your voice, sir. Glad you're safe, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, okay, Danny. Likewise, yeah, good to hear you keeping well, and all the listeners out there. Just everyone says the same thing, isn't it? But we just hope they all stay safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get to the football, what has it been like, and what have you been seeing, reading regarding this pandemic in Portugal? And what has your opinion been of how the Portuguese government has responded to this pandemic?
Yeah, well, I think they've done a good job, to be honest. I think so far, they've been putting out lots of information, clear instructions. They've been making quick decisions, implementing those decisions, and most people here in Portugal have respected those decisions. And as a result, at least we hope, it's as a result, the pandemic hasn't hit Portugal as hard as it has some other countries. Of course, we just need to look over the border at Spain and the terrible things which are happening over there. And luckily, so far, Portugal seems to be, handling it quite well. That said, it's I think every day we get the numbers, don't we? And it's about 30 or 40 deaths a day in Portugal, which is, it's obviously a tragedy. Every death is a tragedy for that person and the family. But, could be worse. And I think at the moment, people are taking it very seriously, the restrictions there. Like I say, they're respecting them. It's just so surreal, like it is all over the world. I'm sure it's the same for you, Danny. Streets almost empty. Just seems like we're living in a different world, doesn't it? Almost like something you think you'd only see in a TV show. But, at the moment, fingers crossed, Portugal hasn't had it so bad as some other countries.
Yeah, and being, just on the other side of Spain, obviously Spain in terms of the European countries, one of the most hard hit in terms of deaths, well over 20,000 now as of the recording of this podcast. Portugal, as you mentioned, have taken some, the response has been good in terms of deaths, although one death to this thing is one too many. But is there any concern from what you've seen, what you've read, that not that it could reach Spain's level, but that the worst could still yet be coming?
Oh, yeah, for sure. People are worried. There's no doubt about it, especially because, Portugal, it's, it's a European country, good standard of life, but we all know it's not the richest country, and it probably hasn't got the best health service in Europe. So, if it really did start to get out of control here in Portugal, it would be... it could be in very big trouble. So I think that's really one reason why people are really taking every restriction. I mean, it's very interesting. You just see, like I was saying a while ago, you see pictures on TV and even just going out, which you thought you'd never see before. Algarve in the Easter is normally packed, especially with Portuguese tourists, actually, because although the foreign tourists tend to come over in the summer, in Easter, a lot of Portuguese people go down there. So you see we had nice weather this Easter, so you just saw all those beaches and all those restaurants and all those kind of promenades virtually empty, which was just a surreal thing to see. That normally had been packed. Same with, restaurants around Easter time. And most of the restaurants nationwide, they're closed, or, a few of them are open for, doing a takeaway service. So, it's really like we're living in a different world. But yeah, at the moment, like I say, I think the response has been good by the authorities and also by the general population. And so, just fingers crossed that things stay under control.
We're talking with Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. He's joining us on episode number 29 of the Seleção podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Tom, let's go to the football here as our good friends that are not my friends, but I just like saying to the football because the guys I'm in Blazers say it and I like it. So anyway, but let's go back to the beginning of March, and we'll go with the off the field first. The last Liga NOS games were played on the weekend of March the 7th and 8th. And the Seleção was also about 3 weeks away from heading to Qatar to play in that friendly tournament against Belgium, Croatia, and Switzerland. And then everything stopped. I believe March 12th, the league was suspended. What were the days like in Portugal prior to the postponement as it was kind of leading up to it? And what was the reaction when the postponement of the season actually became a reality?
Yeah, well, I think it was pretty much like elsewhere, really. It was a bit of a shock when everyone knows, probably all the listeners know, and you certainly know, Danny, that football and soccer has such an important role, has such a big facet of Portuguese society and the country as a whole. And soon, you know, when football stopped, you know, that was like a sign, almost like, wow, this is serious. You know, something very serious is happening. But, you know, people got quickly on board. I think everyone, you know, was very understanding. They realized it was the right decision. And it's been interesting because there's been almost, you could say, like a ceasefire between the normal state of affairs, which is this kind of ongoing war of words between especially Portugal's top clubs, especially, of course, Benfica and Porto. You know, it's almost seems like a long time ago, doesn't it now, Danny? But it was almost a daily occurrence.
Oh,
that
yeah,
the,
absolutely.
You know, the communications, you know, the communications spokesman for Porto would just, you know, be firing off shots to Benfica. That would be quickly responded and that would kind of go backwards and forwards. A bit too much, really. It sometimes even overshadowed the actual football itself. But all of that stopped, obviously, and football itself stopped. You know, obviously, I think like most football fans all over the world, it's we're missing it. We're missing it a lot. You know, we wish it could be played, but we realise this is the correct decision, and just waiting for this to, you know, hopefully pass as soon as possible, or things get to some kind of normality. I'm sure we'll go on to talk about that. I think it's going to be quite a while before things get back to anything like normal, but perhaps there'd be one or two solutions to try and get things progressing, at least in terms of, you know, finishing this season.
Is has there been anything coming from the Primeira Liga president Pedro Proença or Federation president Fernando Gomes in terms of timelines, expectations, options on finishing these leagues, or you know, in dealing with the Seleção? I mean, they have Nations League matches scheduled for this coming fall. Has there been any kind of talk in terms of what could be a logical next step or a safe next step in getting football back going in Portugal?
Yeah, so there's been actually Pedro Proença came up with quite a detailed plan. Really, this is already, you know, it's quite difficult reporting on these stories because things, of course, change so often, almost from day to day, it seems. But Pedro Proença and the Liga, they came up with quite a detailed plan of how they would like the season to finish. And so they even went as far as saying, putting out a kind of schedule, saying the clubs will be back in training in May. There'd be fixtures every weekend starting from the end of May to mid-July. It would also include two midweek you know, round of games, to midweek jornadas, to make sure the season finishes. The cup final would be on the 18th or 19th of July. And so everything would be done and dusted by the end of July. That was the plan. But obviously the games would be played behind closed doors. However, I think to be, you know, I thought when I heard that, I just thought this is like wildly optimistic, to say the least. Pie in the sky, you could even say. But you know, to be fair also to the authorities and to Pedro Proença and the Liga, they did say, you know, this is a provisional plan, and obviously this depends on what the health authorities say, what the government say, what the, you know, the general state of this pandemic is, and so it's subject to change. I haven't really heard anything more since then as far as, you know, specific dates or specific plans go. But like I say, I think that's quite optimistic, to put it mildly. But I suppose one thing it does show, which is the same as in many other countries, again, I think people are quite keen that this season is finished one way or another.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, there's, you know, anytime you kind of start putting dates to some of these projections, it's, I mean, I think you kind of do it in terms of a, you know, there are contracts, there are wages, there are everything that needs to kind of be dealt with prior to, you know, the next season. But at the same time, I think it also, you know, fairly or unfairly, it kind of gives the public a bit of hope that something could happen, because, you know, and you mentioned it a little earlier. Sports is the one thing, is one of the main things in this world, and you and I, obviously, as huge fans of not only soccer and football, but of a lot of sports around the world, it's an escape. You know, it's just to get away from the monotonous life sometimes that we can carry for just a couple of hours. And obviously this is being impacted by this because just like you and I, these athletes are human beings. These guys have families. They have, some have medical issues that this pandemic can definitely, cause havoc to. So it's a tricky combination of trying to be realistic and also giving someone like sports fans hope. And I mean, I don't envy Pedro Proença or anybody or any of these presidents and these general managers and anywhere around the world of trying to get back to normalcy when in fact we just don't know what that normal is yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point, Danny, the hope, people, I think really, to be honest, when they put out this schedule, I'm pretty sure that they, even Pedro Proença himself and the people knew that it really wasn't very realistic. Or I suppose they were, it's the best case scenario, we can say, that, if things really calmed down and they thought this, this pandemic perhaps wasn't as serious as, it has turned out to be. That would be a reasonable schedule. But you're absolutely right. I mean, imagine if they just said, okay, no football until 2022, for example, or even 2021. I think that would be quite devastating for people. And then that would bring up a whole lot of other questions and issues, and how we're going to, like you just mentioned, the contracts and the finances, and how we're going to even help some entities, a lot of entities in football survive, even before we start talking about the individuals and, what it does to their livelihoods. So yeah, hope is a very, I think it's a very important part of a lot of messages put out, both by, in this case, the football authorities in Portugal, and I think even just generally, by politicians there. I think it's very important to, like I say, strike a balance. This is a terrible thing we're going through, but, there will be an end. So I suppose it's just trying to find the best way to get that end and to prepare yourself as best as possible. So, when things do calm down, we can try and decide quickly how to get things back to some kind of normalcy.
You're listening to episode number 29 of the Celeste Song Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. We are joined by Tom Cundert of Portugal.net. Portugal.net is actually where my next question is geared towards. One of the positive things in terms of just a sports fan that has come out of this pandemic is just seeing the different ways teams and outlets like Portugal.net have kind of shifted the way that they are either reporting or just going in different directions or creating something that is just outside of the box because obviously there are no live sports to report on, especially in soccer and especially in Portugal. What was your thinking like as, going back to when this all started and we were asked to shelter in place, what was kind of the thinking of, all right, how do I keep Portugal.net going, and being creative in getting some different topics and different, a different audience, maybe even, to the site. I've loved what Sean Gillen's been doing on his Twitter in terms of the On This Day stuff. Some tremendous goals that sometimes we have forgotten, whether they be for the Celeste Song, for the league, or from players applying their trade in elsewhere in Europe. But what's been like your thinking process in terms of what to do at Portugal.net during this pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when it first hit, I thought, oh my God, the site, I suppose, is just going to have to shut down, just like football shut down. So the site will have to shut down for however long, but thank God for the internet and thank God for archive footage and thank God for, like you said, some very creative and talented writers like Sean Gillen and so many others doing really fantastic work. There's no football at the moment to look at, but there's no end of football, and us, of course, as Portuguese football fans, we're lucky. There's just a whole wealth of brilliant memories to go back on, to look back on. And so, that's one thing which has obviously been quite a dominant feature of the site since the football stopped, which is just, looking back at great matches, classic matches, just classic goals. You mentioned this, fantastic feature, which Sean actually started before the pandemic, which was on this day, where he just started it on Twitter. But you know, he's had such a good reaction to it that it's kind of been rolled out to the site as well. And so, you know, picks out fantastic goals, fantastic moments, and then just describes a little bit about the actual event itself and maybe the career of the person in question or at that time. So that's obviously proved quite popular. And, you know, you see this around a lot of the Portuguese media as well. I think I've been quite impressed in general, even just the normal sites like, you know, Mais Football. And again, Sean's done quite a lot of this, which is talking about how people are coped or are coping, you know, just quite interesting. You know, these are professional athletes, their whole job, their whole life really is based around performing as best they can, you know, on a football pitch. All of a sudden they've been told they have to stay at home, you know, or maybe just do a little bit of training in their back garden or whatever. So it's been very interesting to see how they've reacted, you know, how they're trying to keep themselves fit, just how, you know, their thoughts on, you know, how things are going to be going forward. Then also some of the, you know, some of the bigger sites, for instance, the official Portuguese Football Federation site, Canal OMS, Channel 11, they've done some fantastic stuff, which is just showing old matches, you know, old Seleção matches. I like it when they actually put on the actual commentary of the time. So you're watching it almost as if, you know, you've been transported back in time. It's not, you know, you're not looking at it through today's eyes, as it were. And it's, you know, it's been fantastic. For instance, they did virtually the whole Euro 2016, as you'd expect, tournament. They showed all of those matches, you know, start to finish.
I like how that one ended, Tom. I really do.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, one way to kind of lift the mood of the station, just do that every week, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, no kidding.
You never get bored of watching that. So, yeah, that's good. Also, Porto, I've been impressed with Porto's official, media, social media outlets. They've been doing a really good thing in the last few days, which is having Zoom sessions and bringing together some of the legends, you know, and they've really got, you know, some of their biggest names in their
Absolutely.
Recent history. Yeah, Jose Mourinho, Vitor Bahia, you know, Jorge Costa, Deco, people like that, all getting together and just chatting, talking about.
I think they even had Pinto Costa on.
Yeah.
Friday or Saturday of this week . So, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. So that's obviously, you know, always got interesting things to say, of course. And then, you know, just everyone, I think, doing their little bit. You know, Nathan Moats has also been doing some great retrospectives of some of Portugal's slightly less high-profile matches and tournaments, which, you know, make, again, for very interesting reading, because there may be matches or tournaments which you don't immediately think have such a big place in Portuguese football history, in the history of the Seleção. But, you know, it's all part of the puzzle, which, of course, had its culmination in 2016. And it's interesting, you know, the years and the tournaments before that, seeing what happened, which I think all contributed in some way to, you know, to finally that incredible day in Paris. And so, yeah, you know, I think it's I think we're quite blessed in a way, just being Portugal fans and Portuguese football fans, you know, even club football going way back to even before we were born, Danny, but just in our lifetimes, in our kind of relatively fresh memory, just the last 20 years, it's just been amazing, hasn't it, being a Seleção fan? And so,
absolutely,
you know, that's probably got, you know, months and months and months of, you know, potential material to look back on there.
You know, if Nathan's working on some lesser-known competitions, you know, we always give praise to 2016 as, you know, the first time that Portugal raised an international trophy. But, you know, I've looked at this thing, I would say, maybe a half dozen times, and I may contact Nathan on this. So, Tom, are you aware of the Sky Dome Cup?
The Sky Dome Cup? No, that means nothing to me.
Well, you know, it will after I tell you. The Sky Dome Cup was a soccer tournament played in late January of 1995. In the Sky Dome Stadium, which is now the Rogers Centre in Toronto, between hosts Canada, European champions Denmark and our Slesson. And in a round-robin kind of tournament here, Portugal lifted the cup on January the 29th after a Paulo Alves goal in the 89th minute to beat Denmark's the Danes 1-0. There's not a lot of history on this thing, but if Nathan wants some information on this thing, I'm ready to dig in and see if we can't discover how and why the one and only Sky Dome Cup came to be. And So
Paulo Alves, there you go, late winner from an unlikely source. There you go. I've heard that before.
Yeah. So you know, I hope that trophy is somewhere at the Federation headquarters, because it's the one and only.
Yeah,
it's a rare cup there.
Yeah, well, there's lots of, I'm sure you've seen lots of pictures, Danny, lately. Of course, Portugal, they've had so much success recently in all forms of football. So there's those famous pictures going around of the, I think they had simultaneously, what was it, the European Cup, the Nations League Cup, the Beach Soccer Cup, the Futsal European Championship, I think, wasn't it? So, yeah, but I must admit, I didn't see the Sky Dome Cup in there.
Well, again, maybe one of the positives that may come from this pandemic is the discovery of the history of the Sky Dome Cup, excuse me, from Toronto way back in 95. Let's go quickly to the Slesson and bear with me. This is a bit of a long lead up to this, to the question I'm going to have here, but with the postponement of the European Championship to next summer, in some ways, it comes at a very inopportune time for players who had hit their stride. I mean, most notably, Bruno Fernandes was just started off so well at Manchester United. You saw Diogo Jota at Wolves, scoring in both in the Premier League and in the Europa League. Renato Sanches was playing very, very well in France, and it also kind of gives some players a reprieve, whether through injury or through form, to try to get their form back. Guys like Ricard Pereira and Gonçalo Guedes and André Silva. What it also does to me is that it gives players who may have been a year away an opportunity to maybe perhaps make an impact in the next 12 to 16 months, as well as have Fernand Sanch perhaps make some tough decisions on players who may be at the end of their road. So all that to say and all that to ask, what do you think the current state of the Slesson is, and what kind of impact is the delay of the Euro going to have on this roster next summer?
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? I'm sure it's one lots of Slesson fans are asking, and probably one which lots of national team fans are asking all around Europe. Would it have been better for Portugal if the tournament was scheduled, went ahead as scheduled, and this pandemic never happened? Or will they get some kind of disadvantage or disadvantage from it being a year from now, a year later? Well, I suppose we'll never know the answer to that, will we? Because we can't play two tournaments. But yeah, there's a few situations which stand out. You mentioned the one about the fact some of the players who are aging a little bit will be a year older and a year less fresh. And of course, that obviously the ones which obviously stand out are the centre back partnership of Ruben Dias will still be there, obviously, so there's no problem there. He's just at the start of his career, but his normal partner, of course, would be Pep. And Pep, really is starting to show his age a little bit, not quite, at least at club form for Porto, not quite the same level as he has been throughout his career, understandably. I think he's, 36, is he? Or getting on for 36 now. José Font, same situation as well. So there's no doubt about it. That is a worry. The only thing I would say about that is centre-back is perhaps one of the positions on the pitch, I'd say, along with goalkeeper, where players tend to, play well into their mid-30s, sometimes beyond their mid-30s, without too much of a drop-off. Of course, we need only look back to 2016, Euro 2016, and Can you remember the centre-back partnership that started that tournament, Danny?
The partnership that started that tournament would have been Fernand... No, wait, I'm sorry, in 2016?
Yeah, 2016. Portugal centre-back partnership.
That would have been Ricardo Carvalho.
Absolutely.
And Bruno Alves? No, it would have been... it would have been Pep. It would have been Ricardo Carvalho and Pep, correct?
Absolutely. Look correct. Correct. No, well remembered. That's right. And Ricardo Carvalho, I remember before that tournament, in the lead up to the tournament, I remember it was very interesting that Fernando Santos had done something very different in that tournament. He'd picked the youngest ever player to go to a major tournament for Portugal and the oldest ever player to go to a tournament for Portugal. The youngest was Renato Sanches and the oldest was Ricardo Carvalho. And, you know, he played the first three group matches. And so, you know, he played his part. And then, of course, José Font came in, did a great job and never lost his place. But, you know, that does kind of show you that I think, you know, Pep or Font, one of those two, even if they, you know, it is the chosen partner of Ruben Dias next year, it may not be, you know, such a terrible thing. But I'd say another slight disadvantage for Portugal would be, let's face it, there were those players you just mentioned that were on fire. And Bruno Fernandes, I mean, I just feel so sorry for the guy in general because, I mean, he, you know, he finally got his move to the big time from Sporting. And he's just absolutely took the Premier League by form. He was certainly one of the most talked about footballers on the planet. You know, he just went there and just immediately became kind of the boss of that team and Manchester United's best player in, you know, he literally just walked into the team and he was, you know, it had been as if he'd been there for years.
Tom, it says a lot when he's been there barely a month and they're throwing out comparisons like Paul Scholes to
yeah.
I mean, that's a huge compliment to him.
Absolutely. So in some ways it's a shame. Of course, the other way of putting it, the other way of looking at it is that, of course, there's no reason why in 1 year's time he doesn't maintain his form. And actually, this is one thing I mentioned to a few United fans when I was getting lots of questions about him when a transfer was made. I'd say one problem, potential problem for Bruno Fernandes is that he's played so much football in the last 4 or 5 years, non-stop. You know, he's played for Sporting. He was just never dropped, played every single game, 50, 60 games a season. He went to the World Cup, of course. He played in the Nations League. He's just basically had so much football in his legs and he'd never had any injuries. So that, you know, you always had the potential there that he'd just get a bit burnt out or maybe he'd pick up a bad injury. So perhaps looking on the bright side, you know, him having a few months off might actually give his body the chance to, you know, properly recuperate. And so he'll maintain his form in the next few years. Also, of course, on the upside, we have to mention Ricardo Pereira, who's just been absolutely fantastic the last two or three seasons, especially this, I think the last couple of seasons, he's really starting to get the credit he deserves in England for Leicester. And of course, he seemed to have a terrible bit of luck when he got a bad injury just at the start of this calendar year that ruled him out of Euro 2020. But you know, in a year's time, he should be back. And so hopefully if he's fit, that could actually be an advantage for Portugal. And then I'd say there's two players. I'll pick out two players who you could say, arguably, again, this is perhaps a good thing that the tournament has been put back a year, which is João Félix, who had such a brilliant season at Benfica in his breakout season. But I think if we're honest, we have to say he slightly failed to live up to expectations at Atletico, or at least his adaptation hasn't gone as smoothly as he would have hoped, for sure. And I'd actually put in Bernardo Silva into the list as well. You know, he's such a fantastic player that even just a slight drop off, he still remains a really big weapon for Portugal. But I think, speaking to a few Manchester City fans, they say he just really this season hasn't really hit the heights that he's shown in the previous two seasons. So, you know, if those two come back, if those two hit top form, And then you've also got the fact that maybe Francisco Trincão, you know, one of Portugal's real big hopes for, you know, maybe a next big superstar coming out of Portugal. Maybe if he gets, you know, a few months under his belt, either at Barcelona or on loan somewhere at La Liga, you know, even he could come into the equation. So I don't honestly think some people, this is kind of glass half full, glass half empty situation, isn't it? I don't actually think it's such a bad thing that this tournament has been postponed a year from Portugal's point of view.
You're listening to episode number 29 of the Seleção podcast. Our thanks to Tom Cundert for joining us to talk about life in Portugal after or during, I should say, the COVID-19 pandemic. Tom, these are scary times, and I did not prep you on this, but I kind of want to end off with perhaps a humorous rapid-fire quarantine questions, if you don't mind.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, we'll answer these the best you can. I'm springing this on you right here at the end, and I appreciate you being a good sport. So let's just, if you're ready, we'll start here.
Okay.
All right. What is the strangest food combination you've enjoyed since sheltering in place?
Pizza and rice.
All right. The longest you've gone without either showering or brushing your teeth?
That's a nasty question, Danny. That is below the belt.
I understand. But yeah. Listen, if it's I think two days is the norm now.
Well, the only thing I say is thank God technology has not progressed so far that kind of smells permeate through the internet.
You wouldn't want it on my end, my friend. That's for sure. How are we doing on toilet paper supply?
Pretty good. Yeah. The biggest danger to our toilet paper supply has been the fact that my son insists on doing those, you know, toilet paper challenges and stuff like that. And so I think two of them have gone out of the window, and we live on the seventh floor. So that's, you know, permanently lost. But apart from that, we're managing to get by.
What show or shows have you binged on any kind of streaming services that you would recommend to the listeners?
Well, to be honest, I've just been absolutely okay. I don't want to get political here, but I'll just say this as simply as I possibly can. I have become strangely kind of hooked on watching President Donald Trump's press conferences.
Wow.
I'll say no more.
All right. Hey, listen, that's some reality TV, and I'll also leave it at that as well. What has been your go-to garment since sheltering in place?
Oh, PJs, has to be. Pajamas, yeah. That's going back to your first question or second question, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All righty. Yeah. And then lastly, what's the first thing you're going to do, the first place you're going to visit, the first thing you're going to eat when hopefully this thing is over sooner than later?
Oh, good question. That is good question. I think it would have to be bacalhau assado, because I can make that at home, but it somehow never turns out the same as one of my local restaurants here. Just a simple Portuguese dish, and I just absolutely adore it. So, yeah, that would definitely be where I'll be heading to as soon as this is over. As far as where to go to, I think just a trek to Alvalade or even the Estádio da Luz, just to walk into a football stadium again and see, you know, actual live football and hopefully, you know, a full crowd and everyone safe. That would just be something amazing.
Yeah, that would be ideal, and it would be a welcome sight, that's for sure. Tom, you're the best. Appreciate you coming on this episode. It had been a while since I had put anything out. I kind of was in the mode where I didn't feel like doing an episode just because of everything going on. But, you know, as you mentioned, there's so much, there's a different way of doing this now. Almost it is the new normal for a lot of things. And I definitely wanted to get you on to see how everything is going in Portugal. And I can't thank you enough for your candid responses and letting everybody know what's going on, and hopefully we'll be talking about something on the field soon, more likely behind closed doors for a while, but if there's anything in the world that we can kind of gleam onto, it's hope. So if hope can be out there in the ether, we should grab onto that as best we can.
Yeah, absolutely, Danny. Yeah, always a pleasure, Danny. Great hearing from you. You know, just stay safe. Hope everyone's well wherever they are in the world listening to this. And yeah, you know, just really looking forward to talking about actual football again, hopefully in a not too distant future.
You got it, Tom. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, folks, so you guys have heard from Tom Kundert. He obviously gave us the report from Portugal and how things are going in his neck of the woods. We bring in now Eric Krakauer from BN Sports to give us kind of a more global look at what football and soccer has been like since this pandemic has become a reality for all of us soccer and football fans. You can follow Eric, of course, on social media at Eric Krakauer. That's E-R-I-C-K-R-A-K-A-U-E-R. Eric, welcome back to the Seleção podcast, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back. We were talking a little bit off air about what life is like in quarantine with children. You have two. I have one. I have no idea how you do it because I'm exhausted 24 hours a day. And I do get an opportunity every once in a while to do some work on camera from home. And that's usually when she's taking a nap.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I'm glad you're able to do some work at home. I've seen the setup, some questionable scarves, in my opinion, but I'm glad you're able to do that from home. How has life been with two permanent roommates 24/7?
Well, I think that they have more to put up with me than I do with them, to be honest. And now we have another roommate because we decided yesterday in unison to adopt a sheltered cat. And she has taken to this place like a boss. She basically dictates where she goes, when she goes there. And we sort of revolve around her. So now we have a 14-month-old baby and a 17-month-old cat calling all the shots in this apartment.
So there was some transfer business done in this quarantine period. That's pretty good.
There was indeed.
Oh, well, Eric, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on this episode number 29. As I mentioned, I talked to Tom earlier in the episode, and he kind of gave us a lay of the land of how things are going in Portugal on both the COVID and soccer front. But obviously, you working at a network like BN Sports that covers soccer, we kind of saw the pandemic coming. A few days obviously prior to a lot of stuff getting suspended, just seeing how it was impacting sports. You know, obviously in the States. I think it first rang true in the NBA when the game between the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder was postponed due to Rudy Gobert testing positive for the coronavirus. But what were the days like for you and your colleagues at BN Sports leading up towards the postponement and the halt of soccer around the world? And what do you think, and what are your thoughts on the subsequent reactions to the approaches that the different leagues have taken?
Well, I think it was a little bit of a nebulous time because, like everybody else, we were getting conflicting messages from various governments, I guess. We saw what was happening in China, and there was a feeling, I think, that it was going to become a pandemic. But I don't think a lot of people, including us, realized that this would bring the entire world, let alone the sporting world, to a halt. And when this was actually becoming, when we realized that this was actually going to happen, it was interesting to see, and somewhat dumbfounding to see how different leagues reacted to this pandemic. I am still stupefied that there were a couple of Champions League games and Europa League games played when it became quite clear that this was going to become a problem that was going to be reckoned with, and it was going to potentially be a devastating problem, as it has become. Now, as you said, you know, I work for BN Sports, and we hold the rights to the Turkish Super League, And we had a few games. We had another round of games that was played without fans in the stadium. I called a few of those games, and I was surprised that those games went ahead because the entire world had postponed or canceled their seasons. The Libertadores also made a late decision, and yet Turkey decided to truck on. And as we continue to see in Belarus, they've continued with their campaign as well. So it's certainly curious to see how different football governing bodies made the decision to cancel or postpone everything. But in hindsight, you get the feeling that many of the decisions were made just a little bit too late.
Yeah, we're talking with Eric Krakauer of BN Sports. He's kind enough to join us here on episode number 29 of the Selecion Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Pinto. Just talking life during this during COVID-19 and especially in the soccer and the football world. There's so many like legalities and contracts, Eric. Whether it be TV contracts, player contracts, coaches, you name it. And I guess what I may be asking you, it may not be fair given all those scenarios here. But if you, Eric Krakauer, was the czar of football for the entire world, what would you do with the leagues around the world? Would you, especially with the European leagues, they're anywhere between 60 to 70% completed. With the MLS, they had just started their 25th season. I think they're two or three games in. What would you do? And how would you go about, either finishing the leagues or doing anything with the leagues? What would you do?
Well, first of all, I like the sound of Czar Krakauer or football Czar.
Sounds intimidating. It really does.
Well, not at all. Not once you see me. It's a really complicated matter, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to work ever since the unwelcome arrival of the coronavirus. And one of the things, or a few of the topics that we have been talking about at a considerable clip is exactly, the continuation of the leagues, the postponement of the leagues, the contractual issues, whether those be with players or sponsorship companies. For example, Liverpool right now find themselves in a little bit of a mess because June 30th marks the end of their deal with New Balance and the beginning of their contract with Nike. And that is a situation that I think still has to be sorted out. Look, I don't necessarily know how you'd go about solving this. I've been pretty firm on the stance that I think we need to complete the seasons because that seems to me financially like what needs to happen. You have TV revenue, for example, that is tied to the completion of these leagues. And as you know well, Danny, I mean, you talk about the Premier League or you talk about La Liga, which we have the rights to, they have incredible contracts with TV networks, and for the most part, those the money that is paid out in those contracts goes in increments. It gets paid out in increments. It's not just a one lump sum payment. And what you've essentially seen throughout Europe is a lot of TV networks saying, "Look, we're not going to give you this last lump sum," because they also have to be concerned about their own survival. If you are a network that that caters in football mainly, in soccer and all the leagues, well, let's just say sports, and every single sporting activity has been postponed, and that is where you get your revenue, you are concerned about your outlay as well. And there's a considerable amount of money being spent on these leagues. So it seems to me that the most feasible thing to do is to complete the leagues. Now, how that happens depends on how long the coronavirus dictates the timetable. And as we've seen with the way that in the United States, the peak has hit states at different periods of time, I think we're going to see leagues finish at different periods. And that creates a complication looking forward to the 2020-2021 season, if that is even a possibility. I've mentioned that this might set in motion a move towards a calendar year league, like we see in a lot of places in South America, as we see with MLS, where we have a 2021 season. And because there are so many uncertainties about finishing the current season, I don't even think we can look forward to the next campaign, wherever that is. So for me, and I don't know if I've sort of gone on tangents
here,
the most realistic situation seems to be finishing these leagues, and FIFA has actually stepped in and given an open window for domestic leagues to complete their campaigns. Finish the campaign, make sure that you get the revenue that you need, because one of the things that we have discovered through this pandemic is that so many clubs, even the biggest clubs in Europe, take Barcelona, for example, were basically existing by spending most of their revenue. So they needed the revenue. They needed the ticket sale revenue in order to be above the red. Now, that doesn't seem fiscally responsible to me, and it seems to me that we're going to hit a reset button when it comes to expenditures in the game. I don't think we're going to see $150 million transfers anymore, and I certainly hope not, because I think spending that kind of money is immoral. But I think we're going to see a reset button when it comes to that. And I think that the only way that you're ever going to be able to gauge where you are after this pandemic financially is to complete the campaigns, get that TV revenue money, get the sponsorship money. But of course, the one obstacle there, and that you mentioned in your question, is what do you do with player contracts? There are players who are finishing out their contracts on June 30th. In fact, Bournemouth, we did a show recently on BN where we were looking at players in the Premier League who were ending their contracts and the teams they play for. Bournemouth, I believe, if memory serves me right, have seven players whose contracts end on June 30th. Now, if you're a team battling against relegation, battling to stave off relegation, you need everybody that you can use to win out that battle. Now, FIFA stepped in and said, look, you can extend contracts, but you have to agree. It has to be an agreement between clubs and players. Players may agree to extend their contracts a couple of months, but the one problem there is what happens if you suffer a serious injury and that, you know, truncates your career or prevents you from signing for another club. So a lot of legal complexities that I don't have a brain for or the grounding to answer anything about. But for me, it seems that finishing these campaigns in some way is the right way to go.
Very interesting. Very interesting. It's episode number 29 of the Celeson podcast. You're listening to Eric Krakauer here as he breaks down kind of the ramifications of what this pandemic has kind of brought to the sporting world, especially in the world of football. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Eric, obviously you're able to work from home a little bit, which is again a new normal for a lot of folks, myself included. I'm very fortunate to be able to do my job from my home. How has the day-to-day working for BN, when you encompass working from home, how has that differed than when you head into the studio?
Well, I think primarily it's a mindset, right? You go into work and I feel like you shift into work mode. And so you have to be able to do that at home when you are in quarantine and you're here every day. And one of the ways that I've done that is by, you know, obviously changing my clothes and dressing up a little bit. One, because I need to for our live show at 7 p.m. But that helps a lot. The other thing has been communication.
Eric, not to interrupt you here, but do you go with the blazer and shirt and then shorts that they don't see look, or do you go full suit?
I go for shorts and the shirt and the blazer.
Attaboy.
Most of the time. Most of the time.
Attaboy.
But there's actually a practical reason behind that. In my bedroom, we have a very large closet, which is...
Hey, don't brag about it, man. I mean,
Well, hold on. 99% of that closet is taken up by my fiance's clothing.
Understood.
So my closet is in my daughter's bedroom. And it just so happens that... that the shows that we do tend to fall within the period when my daughter is sleeping, which helps a lot.
Absolutely.
But I can't quite go in and get some of the clothes. So if I forget to get my pants, then I'm wearing shorts underneath where you can't see, obviously.
Understood.
And I think most people are doing that. But getting back to the question, the biggest difficulty, other than a mindset, is communication. You know, when you are in the offices of the network, you meet with your producers, you go into a room, you discuss the show, you go over rundowns, you consider which ways you approach a story. You know, and when everybody is in a room, it makes it a lot easier. When you are meeting on Zoom, it's a much harder, but you know, you have to wait for somebody to say something. You don't see facial expressions as your cues. If I come up with an idea and I look at one of my producers and he's giving me the stink eye, I know that I should drop that idea immediately. And, you know, sometimes we don't have the camera on Zoom, which is suspicious. But it makes that difficult. And then all the technical parts during the broadcast are our responsibility. So we are given equipment by the network, and then we set it up with their instructions. And if there is a problem, we have a producer who's on the phone with us, but we have to handle it ourselves. When we're in studio, that certainly is not within our purview of concerns. So it changes things a little bit, but I think that for the most part, the shows go off without too many hiccups.
You know, you posted not too long ago on your Twitter account, and again, you can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Krakauer, ERICKRAKAUER. You posted a picture of yourself a little less than a week ago with. You had the mask on, you had the headset on. Obviously, this is in BN Studios, correct?
Yes.
How is that situation in terms of? Obviously, we're asked to shelter in place. There are essential businesses in the state of Florida that have been deemed essential. The entertainment industry being one of them. But what's the feeling like now? Ever since this started, about leaving your house and then heading to the studio to go to work, especially when you have the option, I guess, to do it from home. But what's that dynamic like now going into the actual studio?
Well, I think it should be noted that anytime there is a decision made by our superiors that people need to go to studio, it is because it is a necessity for a particular show. And one of the things that has changed, I think, for me and a lot of my colleagues is the comfort level of going to work, because we know that BN is taking every possible precaution to make sure that sets, control rooms are as safe as possible. People are all wearing the appropriate attire. Very few people are allowed in the building. There is social distancing between everybody. So because there are so many precautions in place, I feel comfortable going to work. And I've been going a couple of times because we're rehearsing for a show that we're going to do. And of course, you know, I go there. I've gone there twice since this whole thing has happened, and there are producers who have to go there on a regular basis, because every show, for the most part, gets produced from a control room, and they are very careful They follow every guideline. So while it is certainly different, and at first it was eerie because you don't see many people there, you're almost coming into a building that is empty. I feel very secure in doing so because every precaution has been taken.
You're listening to episode number 29 of the Celestzone podcast, and you're hearing Eric Krakauer, BN Sports, kind of giving us a breakdown of what it's like right now working for BN in this global pandemic. You know, Eric, we mentioned the MLS earlier in the interview here, and obviously they began their 25th silver anniversary season, and obviously that's been kind of brought to a halt here after just a few weekends. But Inter Miami had finally debuted, a long-awaited debut this season, and you and along with a co-host by the name of Frank Panizzo, you guys had started the Miami Total Football Radio podcast, which covered Inter Miami. So obviously, there's been a halt to the season, but to go to the beginning of getting involved in this project, how did you get involved in the project, and what's it been like to kind of do these shows with, you know, the pandemic, halting everything?
Yeah, well, it's been a problem. We've actually only done one show since the pandemic, mostly because there is no content. And the show that we did, we were doing remotely.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually happened pretty organically. Franco Panizzo, who I'm sure you know and perhaps many of your followers do and listeners, has been covering MLS for the better part of a decade. He actually is one of the reporters, I think, who's got his nails well dug into how the league works, and he gets, you know, exclusives. And he was based in New York, but decided at the beginning of this year, in January, I believe, to move back to South Florida, where he actually is from, to be closer to his family and to work here in the warmth. Turns out that it was a pretty good decision, considering everything that we are unfortunately seeing in New York City, where I lived for 17 years. And I lived in Queens as well, which is one of the boroughs that has been the hardest hit by COVID-19. But when Franco decided to come down here, he was considering starting a podcast to cover Inter Miami. He asked me if I'd be interested, and I had time, and since Franco and I have been friends for quite a few years, because we always used to bump into each other in the press rooms, whether it be the New York Red Bulls or NYCFC, I decided that, yeah, it would be interesting, because I actually miss MLS, or I missed MLS after leaving New York. I missed going to live games, even though Miami FC were here, are here, continue to be here. So it was a project that we both wanted to embark on, and it's been fun. And now, of course, we don't know what's going to happen with MLS. They're in the same situation as everybody else, and we'll see how the podcast continues from there.
Yeah, I listened a little bit to, I believe it was your last podcast. I think it was on the 7th of April, and you kind of,
yeah, that would have been the last one. Yep.
Yeah, and you guys were kind of addressing this a little bit, but I'll ask it anyway. In terms of like financial ramifications, you know, Inter Miami, obviously, AEG owns everything in the MLS, but there's a lot of backing with Miami. Has there been any kind of either concern or discussion as to how an expansion franchise kind of survives its first season when there's nothing going on?
Well, I think this is where the issue of centralization comes into it. You know, a lot of people don't like the fact that MLS is essentially a centralized entity. It is one entity that controls everything. And I actually think that, and look, I'll tell you right off the bat that I'm not someone who knows the ins and outs of MLS financially. I know very
sure
basic information, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of your listeners know more about this than me. But the fact that it's a centralized league, I think, has actually helped the league, because you don't have these clubs navigating by themselves, navigating these turbulent waters. But having said that, something like 70% of the revenue. Actually, that may be a little bit too much, but certainly a large swath of club revenue in MLS comes from match day revenue, so ticket sales. And because they don't have that, that causes a distinct problem. In fact, I forget the name right now, but one of the co-owners of the Seattle Sounders recently gave an interview where he said that the league stands to lose millions. I think he even used the word billions of dollars if the league doesn't start up again whenever it is safe to do so. So, of course, like every other league, I know that MLS is suffering. This was a huge blow for Inter Miami because they had managed over the past couple of years in particular to really get an enthusiastic support in this city for the club. With Inter Miami has, I think, three, if not four, supporters groups that are very much involved with the club. And the games were suspended, I think, 3 days before Inter Miami's first home game. And there was a lot of hype in this city about that game. There was a lot of hype about Inter Miami's first two games, which were away from home with a lot of viewers parties, which is something that you don't see in every MLS market. People getting together in bars, so actual appropriate designations for these parties. It's something that has become quite cultural here in Miami, and it's sad that it was interrupted. But overall, I think that every club is feeling the pinch, and we do know that when it comes to the main MLS employees in the main office, there has been a scaled wage reduction. I think the executives took a 25% wage reduction, and then it depends on how much money you earn. So, like everybody else, leaking money—that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, one of my previous guests and a good buddy of mine, Eric Vieira. He is a co-host of the Corner of the Galaxy podcast, which covers the LA Galaxy, and he mentioned what you mentioned too is having, you know, a centralized ownership of the league overall may be a benefit in a situation like this. So it remains to be seen what the league will do and how the league will move forward. You know, being I believe it's only two games in. Would you just restart this season and just start from scratch, being that it's only gone two matches, or would you try to find some other way to complete whatever remnants of a season the MLS would have left?
No, I don't think so. The biggest problem going forward is figuring out how you're going to fit in every game into a very short period of time. So I don't think you start over. I do think we're going to have to see one of two things: a condensed regular season or a scrapping of the playoffs. Now, I doubt, because we live in the United States of America and playoffs are like a religion in this country. Sure. I don't think MLS would do away with playoffs. What I think they're going to do is condense the regular season, perhaps just limit it to just one game between opponents, no return schedule, if you will. And I think that there is a possibility that can be done. Whether that happens before the end of 2020, I certainly don't know, because, and you and I talked about this, just given what we are seeing from those people in the know, this is going to last a very long time. And I just don't see how leagues are going to be able to justify shoehorning leagues when it is still dangerous to be out and about in groups. And I'm talking about not even having people in the stands. I'm talking about exposing players to each other. And the only way that's ever going to happen is if mass testing is available to everybody, so that you know that you are not putting an opponent or even a teammate or a staff member at risk.
Yeah, finally, Eric, I wanted to get your take a little bit on Portugal, and And obviously, the defending European champions will have to wait one more year for the defense of that. So I'll gladly, I guess, say that we are the first 5-year reigning European
champs.
I mean, I know Spain won it back to back, but that's two different tournaments. So I mean, that they've never done it for 5 years in with one trophy, Eric. But
that's true.
But you know, my question, and I posed this to Tom earlier. What kind of impact in terms of the roster, and in terms of the squad, in terms of selection, based off of what Fernand Sanch has selected in the past year or so, a 12 to 16 month difference here in terms of us getting to Euro 2021, now we'll call it, I do see some semblance of some turnover in some certain areas. But what do you think of the current status, the current state of the Portuguese team, and what could you see, kind of just your opinion of what we could see next summer?
I think this is a bit of a headache for Fernando Santos. Let's start with the defensive sector. I mean, we were already struggling to figure out who was going to play alongside Ruben Dias, because Pep is getting up there in age. What is he, 36 now? He's had some injuries with Porto. He actually had some injuries when he was with Beşiktaş as well. So even though he is still very much, I think, a very good center back, there were questions about his endurance, his ability to be at his best at Euro 2020. And then you look at who else is going to partner him. I mean, you've got what can I think of his name at Lille right now? Joseph Font, who's also getting older. Maybe this is an opportunity for somebody like Ferro from your beloved Benfica to step up, but we don't. I think the jury is still out whether Ferro is a good enough starting center back for a national team. Even though I think he's shown some good signs, definitely. Let's talk about Cristiano Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo is 35 years old. Yes, he is scoring in droves at Juve. He's equaled Gabriel Batistuta's consecutive scoring record, albeit he did take a break in that run, and Batistuta did not. But he's going to be 36 years old. 36-year-old Cristiano Ronaldo will still be better than 75% of all professional players. But is he going to be the guy who is going to absolutely make the difference like he has in qualification, like he has in so many tournaments? So I think it behooves Fernando Santos to start thinking about what alternatives there may be in that position. I mean, there is some good news too. If the Portuguese national team is going to bet on somebody like João Félix, well, he gets another year under his belt, and his form has been far from great at Atletico Madrid. I've called a lot of their games. I don't think it's entirely his fault. I think the system doesn't suit him. But there's also an adaptation period that will continue because of this break. Perhaps you get the Bruno Fernandes becoming an even better player because he is playing in a better league against higher caliber players week in and week out. So there are positives. But when you look at important players and their age, you absolutely have to be concerned about this team. And I don't know whether the young players, take a Gonçalo Guedes, for example, have proven that. And listen, I'm mindful that he scored the winner in the Nations League against Holland, but have proven they are consistent enough performers for being starters and players who can carry on doing the work that has been done over the last few years with this Portuguese national team.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Gonçalo Guedes scored the winner in the Nations League final. Eder scored the winner in extra time, or against France to bring home the Euro. These are obviously not household names in terms of everyday contributors to the Seleção, but everyone has their day. But I agree with what you're saying. There needs to be some proving of this younger generation as the older one does come out. It's interesting, and depending on how these leagues go, like what kind of form are not only Portugal but the rest of these European squads going to be like, come next summer and for this European tournament, it's going to be very interesting indeed, Eric.
Sorry to cut you off. I mean, that's another important thing, right? What kind of domestic leagues are we going to be seeing to get these players at tip-top level? But you could say that about any league, couldn't you? Right?
Absolutely.
You could say, any national team. I mean, you could say that about Holland or Spain. But I think it's mostly glass half full, though, because we do have. You look at the pound for pound, player for player, we have a lot of talent in our national team. But unfortunately, just like in 2016, by the way, where there were concerns about the center back tandem, Ricardo Carvalho played a couple of those games.
Yep.
And he was up there in age. There were doubts about whether José Font was going to be able to rise to the level that he had to be at, and he met, by the way, because he was fantastic.
He was
same
unreal.
Concerns, yeah, same concerns going into this tournament. But having said that, we do know certain things. We got Ricardo Pereira, one of the best right backs in the world. He's certainly going to be there. You got Rafael Guerreiro, whether he ends up playing in midfield, I don't think so. He'll continue to be the left back. You look at Bruno Fernandes. Our boy at Bernardo Silva at Manchester City. We still have a very good core, and I'm still very hopeful about 2021 if that's what they end up calling the Euro.
Absolutely. Finally, Eric, first off, I want to thank you obviously for the time. We're both stuck at home, but still, thank you for your time, because we both have families that are wondering why we're taking so long on this interview. But I just wanted to ask you some rapid fire quarantine questions, if you're up for it.
All right. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's see if I'm up there. All right. Go ahead.
Here we go. How are you doing on toilet paper?
Have enough, but I didn't hoard.
Good for you. Good for you. What's the longest you've gone without either showering or brushing your teeth?
Not very long. I've tried to maintain to the routine.
Yeah, hygiene's important, so that's good. What's the strangest food combination you've enjoyed since sheltering in place?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know what? I'm lucky enough to say I haven't had to do anything crazy. I have a very handy fiance in the kitchen, and I'm pretty good at a few things as well. So we've been good in that department. A lot of salads.
Nice. What show or shows have you binged on and would recommend to listeners?
Embarrassingly, I'm not recommending it, but I've watched Love is Blind, which is enough to give you an aneurysm. I am watching Narcos right now, the second season. And what did I just finish that was really good? Oh, Ozark. I just finished the third season. Certainly recommend Ozark. It's fantastic. And if you haven't seen Schitt's Creek, you have to watch Schitt's Creek if you like things that are funny.
You know, my wife has been watching. My wife actually just finished Ozark, and she's been telling me Schitt's Creek is pretty good as well, so I may pick up.
You married well, my friend. You married well.
Don't I know it, buddy? what's been your go-to garment since the sheltering in place has happened?
Shorts.
Nice.
Definitely shorts. Yeah.
Listen, are you listening, ladies? Huh? And then finally, what's the first thing you're going to do, first place you're going to visit, first thing you're going to eat when this thing finally is over, hopefully sometime soon?
Eat probably some tacos, even though it's been hard to find good tacos in Miami. I found one good place here in Hollywood, which isn't Miami. And kicking a ball, man. I do. I'm fortunate enough. You know, I said earlier in the show that I used to live in New York, and I had a pretty decent apartment for a bachelor at the time. But going out in this current situation would have been almost an impossibility. I'm very lucky now that I with the weather in Florida, the fact that I have essentially what is a backyard, I can juggle the ball by myself. I've posted videos of my daughter, who thankfully has become obsessed with a soccer ball. She woke up the other morning, and the first thing she said was goal.
Nice.
So either I'm doing something very wrong or I'm doing something very right. But I cannot wait to just get on a football field, man, and tackle somebody with all the fury in the world. Because maybe you're like me in this way. That is the one place where I let out all my frustrations. I'm sort of calm and even-handed because I get to knock some people around on the soccer field legally.
I feel sorry for the guy who's about to get studded by you when this thing is all over. But I'm sure it'll be welcomed on both sides. But yeah, just trying to get back to some sort of sporting normal.
As you
work in the business, obviously you had a background in playing in soccer and football aren't the only interest that you and I have, and it's sports is strange right now. I actually am loving the kind of the retrospectives that networks are doing in terms of older, going to games from 3, 4, 10, 15 years ago. I've been watching, not to kiss your ass a little bit here, but I've been watching the 90 and 30 on BN a lot, just because I don't have to sit through the 90. I could just sit through the 30 and get my fix that way. So,
and listen, we have a lot of leagues for Libertadores, Sudamericana, La Liga, Liga, and the Turkish Super League. There is plenty of football for your taste. And since you mentioned that, actually, next Friday at 10 o'clock at night for your listeners, we're playing a Clasico from a few years ago. I won't tell you which one. And I will be sitting down with Andres Cordero, who is not only the play-by-play, one of my play-by-play partners at BN Sports, but he's also the voice, or will be the voice, of Inter Miami here for local TV. And he and I are going to sit through this game. We're going to talk about the game, not commentate like normal commentators. And it's going to be live on Facebook, YouTube, and of course on our two channels. And you can send in comments and questions about the game. So I definitely encourage everybody next Friday at 10 o'clock to watch that.
Be there, man. BN Sports next Friday. That would be what? Friday the 24th?
I don't even know what month we're in.
I think it is. Yeah, it'll be April 24th, 10 p.m. Eastern. Check out Eric on this Clasico replay. Which replay and which year it'll be? You never know. But
you'll find out. It's a good one, though. It's a great game.
I'm guessing it'll be something involving Ronaldo versus Messi. I guess that'd be my only guess.
No, we shall see.
We shall see. I don't want to spoil anything. Eric, you're the best, man. Thank you very much. Stay safe. The best to your family. And we will hopefully talk soon and hopefully have some actual soccer to discuss.
I hope so. Thanks for having me on. All the best to your beautiful family. Until next time.
All right, brother. Thank you. And once again, a big thank you to Eric Krakauer of BN Sports. You can follow Eric again on Twitter at Eric Krakauer. That's ERICKRAKAUER. Make sure if you've listened to this podcast, if you listened to this episode, obviously if you're listening to it, you're hearing me tell you that you've listened to it. But let Eric know what a great job he's done. What I want as much as I could possibly get from you guys is when we have guests on, and we give their social media contacts and stuff, let them know how great of a job that they did on the show, and that their time was well spent here on the podcast. So yes, again, get out to Eric Krakauer, let him know he did a great job, as well as Tom Kundert of Portugal.net. Again, follow Tom on Twitter at Portugal1. That's PORTUGOAL and the number one. Obviously, our partnership with Tom has benefited us tremendously with Portugal.net. But to get an idea from him as to not only how things are going in Portugal, but how his business, his site, has kind of gone through, and what the changes they've gone through since this pandemic has started, was really interesting as well. And I can't thank them both for taking the time for coming on and sharing their thoughts and their insights during this crazy, crazy time in the world. So that's going to do it for episode number 29. Greatly appreciate you guys listening. Again, spread the word about the podcast as much as you can. I'm going to try to get some more pods and some more episodes up with a little bit more frequency now that I kind of have a more sense of normal in my life. And not even a sense of normal, a more sense of balance. My kids have been tremendous in trying to help me balance out. And they do so by just being around me all day long. It's 24/7, which, you know, my wife reminds me that as bad as the pandemic is, we're not going to get this time, this solo time with our children ever again once this thing is over. So if you have someone, whether it's children, a spouse, a parent, a friend, a relative, if you have those folks that are around you right now and they're around you 24/7, as much as they can annoy sometimes, take it all in, because I have a feeling that we're going to go through a little bit of withdrawal once this pandemic is over. So just enjoy the time you have with your folks, with your kids, with your spouse, with anyone who you're quarantined with right now. Make the best of it and just enjoy the time together, given everything that's going on. I think it's probably one of the best things that we can do. I also, again, want to thank all our essential workers out there around the world who are putting themselves in danger in order for us to have our society move forward and stay solvent, for lack of a better term. You know, our law enforcement, firemen, you know, grocers or delivery people. Again, if I'm missing anyone, I do apologize. Geez, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, everything. A big thank you, and I hope that you guys understand how much we appreciate what you guys are doing and giving us the opportunity to stay home and to be with our families. You know, a quick shout out to my prima Anna. Anna is a nurse here in Sacramento, California. And again, I don't want to miss anyone who I'm friends with who are doing the same, but Anna has been a great source of not only knowledge on the on what's going on in the hospitals, but just what we should be doing at home. And I love Anna. She's one of the best people to come into my life since I got married to my wife Suzette. And our boys she has two boys. We have two boys. Her and her husband Brandon have two great kids. And we're missing hanging out with them, but we all know that this is all for the greater good. And to my in-laws and my folks who haven't seen the boys in about a month, each vai passar, ten paciência, ten fé, and this will get us through. And I can't thank my kids and my wife for keeping me as calm as possible. So. Again, little soapbox there, but I hope you guys can just find balance and peace during this time, and we will get through it, and we'll be better for it as well, hopefully. So that will do it for episode number 29 of the Sly Zone Podcast. Again, want to thank my guests Tom Kundert and Eric Krakauer for coming on. Again, follow us on all our social medias, and make sure you guys share this show and share the site and share all our pages and accounts with all your family and friends all around the world. So my name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of the Sly Zone Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. And as always, Força Portugal!